the midweek drive, zooming into the future and energized by the now.
The Midweek Drive Team, four words which signify quality and all that's best in audio entertainment.
I have to say, that was pretty awesome. What was it, you might well say? Well, it was Circles. Who was singing it, you might well say? Well, it was Sophie. Was that Sophie from Sophie and the Sticks, you might say? Yes. Can we speak to her? Well, maybe through the magic of Zoom. Yes, Sophie, welcome to the Midweek Drive. How are you?
Hi, Alex. Thank you so much for having me. I'm very well. Thank you so much. How are you doing?
Excellent. Well, it's always great to connect with a resident originally of Brighton who's now in the region of Gloucestershire doing all sorts of other marvellous things there. So great stuff there. And presumably we've got that right because we were looking at the website and I think you said born in Brighton and now obviously a resident in the West Country almost.
Yep, bit of a strange move. We lived in a bit of an odd area in Brighton and we actually ended up doing a house swap. I didn't even know you could do these, but Cheltenham was basically the first place that said they would swap houses with us and we didn't even know where it was, but we went and the rest is history, as they say.
Well, there we are. Now, you're going to be featured in the Midweek Drive Live, of course, and that's going to be very exciting. But Sophie and the Sticks, is that because you have an aficionado for drummers? Is it just a case of you have a sort of a penchant for the notion of living in the Sticks? Is it a case of you just like these strange pieces of wood, the Sticks? Share with us. How did it come about?
Well, do you know what? It's kind of all of the above, but it did come from... So the Sticks is actually a nickname for my drummer. Yes, so you're right. You know, nail on the head or stick on the drum.
Drumstick on the cymbal, perhaps.
Just sort of rolled off the tongue one day. I said, oh, you know, Sophie and the Sticks are in, I don't know, we were in trouble over something funny. And it just kind of stuck. And so now, yeah, we've got Sophie, the Sticks, and we've got our bassist, John, who we didn't really know how to fit into the name of the band because he joined a few months after we started. We didn't think Sophie and the Sticks and John had as much of a ring to it. So we've just popped him in and he's the and sign. He's the ampersand in the band now. So it's, yeah.
Well, I mean, yeah.
Sophie, John,
day...
and Leah, the Sticks.
Fantastic. Back in the day, of course, Josie and the Pussycats, long before your time, did very well. So it's a whole new world of life, really. You can look forward, Sophie, obviously, to a cartoon series, to a whole range of adventures for Sophie and the Sticks as they carry to take on the world, which is very good. talk to us a bit about what we've just been listening to, which is Circle, because that was a live production. Again, a very resonant in a whole range of ways. How has your musical career been developing? A nice simple question, really, to be sort of compressed into a short period of time.
Yeah, sure. Circles was the first project that we did, you know, to put out to the public. We recorded it at a lovely venue called the Frog and Fiddle in Cheltenham, which is one of the sort of key music venues. They've been around for about 25 years. If you come down to Cheltenham to play a gig, anyone, you need to play there. They've got a beautiful barn out the back, so we thought it suited really well with the kind of moodiness of the song. The song actually came about, yeah, I don't want to go too deep, but I was a little bit religious for a few years of my life. And it was about kind of breaking away from that and seeing, you know, these
saints, Sophie and the Stick. This could be quite nice, you know? Yeah, you can actually sort of get canonized on that basis.
Yeah. But yeah, it's just about sort of breaking away from that and seeing the sort of patterns that people move in and, you know, that there's a kind of facade that people put on in life, you know, and sort of scratching beneath the surface of that and seeing a bit of the grit underneath. I hope that makes sense. But
well,
yeah,
there was the classic line, Harry Chapin, all of life's a circle, sunrise and sunset, sunrise and sunset. Which is quite profound. The world goes round and round again. We might play it actually to lead into the cinematic and film review slot, basically. But again, way before your time. But then again, time's just an illusion, so we just have to continue on our sort of route.
I love that. You mentioned,
of course, the venue in Gloucester, and I presume that's where all of our major correspondents, like Hannah O'Brien, of course, would have probably checked you out basically on that sort of basis. So, you know,
Lovely Hannah. She's hooked me up with you. So shout out to Hannah. Thank you so much.
Exactly. Our regular Gloucestershire correspondent. Let's talk a bit about She Sings, She Writes, because this is something you do on a monthly basis and it's all about showcasing female musical talent. Tell us about it.
Yeah. So I just realised playing a lot of shows, yeah, starting to play more and more and seeing female artists, you know, who were great, but kind of sandwiched in between things that didn't really suit or not suit, but yeah, do you know what I mean? They were just sort of sandwiched in a lot of kind of different acts. And I thought it would be great to bring all these amazing female artists together and, you know, give them a space where they know that what they're performing is going to be listened to and appreciated, and that people have turned up to actually hear that, rather than sometimes feeling like you don't really belong.
There are three regular contributors to the Madrid Drive Live, of course: Tallulah Randall, Victoria Simmons, and Chloe Rose. I think who'd all they all fulfil the line of being female singer songwriters, and we're constantly saying they need to obviously have their profile raised even more. So who knows? Maybe ideal for them as well sometime.
Hook me up. Yeah, that's what it's about. So part of the first of all, we just want to create a really beautiful space. We've had a lot of comments on how nice the sort of vibe is. Very welcoming and inclusive and supportive. And then I always do a lot of promotion about the artists, do a sort of spotlight leading up to the event. And then on the night, say a little spiel about them and, make sure everybody knows where to find all their stuff and where they're from and what they're about. So I think that's really important as well, because sometimes you just have to get up and sing and, talk to people. So it's nice to have an introduction and a supportive sort of groundwork so that you can feel really comfortable.
And how can people actually find out about She Sings, She Writes? Where's the best place to actually go if we've got musicians who are listening to this who might sort of think, I might like to make contact over that basis?
Well, that would be great. And that's, kind of my main goal in talking to you, Alex, because I know you've got Lincoln University does music courses and music production, so, and you've got links to the Lincoln Arts Centre, is that right, as well? So
very true.
Definitely love to head up there. But mainly we're on Instagram at the moment. That's the easiest platform to sort of research musicians and get in touch with people and share content. Mm. So it's just at She Sings, She Writes, just all one word, easy. Or you can email shesingsshewrites@gmail.com. And yeah, we'd love to hear from any artists that think they might want to get involved, or venues, or yeah, anyone really.
Fantastic. And of course, sophieandthesticks.com presumably is the best place to find out details initially on the web before they travel off to Instagram and all the other sort of fun social media folk that are actually out there.
That would be great. Yeah. sophieandthesticks.com. Thank you.
Sophie, it's been terrific connecting with your good self slightly briefly today, a kind of an intro, an aperitif basically of more Sophie mm-hmm. K goodness that's to come together with Sophie and the Sticks. But I'll still ask you those last two questions. Have you had a reasonably interesting Zoomer with us on the programme today? Has it been good for you?
Absolutely. Yeah, this is very exciting. Thank you. Excellent. What can I ask? Can I talk about your background? I don't know, as in your actual background.
Well, as in radio, we can have all sorts of other magical things with respect to that. But for the benefit of the dear listener, in terms of a descriptive side of things, I thought, well, Sophie's music struck me as being a little bit like having a sort of pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. So why not actually go for that particular side of things? I mean, there are all sorts of other areas. When we're doing our New York Real Talk sort of package, we obviously go for a New York Real Talk image from that perspective. We can change it up and actually charge it to all sorts of other zones. We could even, if we actually so choose, decide to actually say, well, okay, enough already. The viewer and indeed the co-interviewee can actually cope without having any background whatsoever, and we need to actually start switching up the notions of the sort of the image and the color coding things that we work through, or ultimately, as I like to say, Sophie, decide it's all right, embrace your inner canine and simply have the entire interview conducted by a friendly canine who actually does his whole thing, etc. A little tour de force there of radio in its own sort of form. So there you go.
Not sure if that's an improvement, but that's very entertaining. Thank you so much.
Sophie, take care. We'll speak to you again very, very soon.
Thank you, Alex. Take care too. Bye bye.
You see, all my life's a circle, sunrise and sundown. The moon rolls through the nighttime till the daybreak comes around. Oh, all my life's a circle, but I can't tell you why. The seasons spinning round again, the years keep rolling by. You know, it seems like I've been here before. I sure can't remember when. And I got this funny feeling that we'll all get together again and again and again and again. Now no straight lines make up my life, and all my roads have bends. There's no clear-cut beginnings, and so far no dead ends. You gotta stay, sing what you're feeling, bro. I found you a thousand times, guess you've done the same. But then we lose each other, it's just like a children's game. But as I find you here again, the thought runs through my mind. Our love is like a circle, let's go round one more time. Steve Chip.
Now, before we go out with a blaze of glory, and before I get Yvonne to sing this song for you, I'd like to make a short pitch. As most of you know, group and I do about half our concerts as benefits. Each of the last 3 years, we raised over $700,000 for things we believe in. 1980, we almost did $800,000. And above and beyond that, we raised an extra $150,000 through the sale of concessions. Tonight's no different, and on the way out there, the guy from World Hunger, a foundation we started 5.5 years ago, who is selling copies of my poetry book. Already sold about 65,000 copies, all the money going to World Hunger. I'm proud of the book anyway. It's illustrated by a young guy who's an extraordinary artist named Rob White. And also some, the last, I think, of the Harry It Sucks t-shirts. God, I hope those weren't going to sell, but World Hunger said, try them, Harry, you'll see. People relate to this. Unfortunately, they were right. Also, some new programs tell you more about the group than what we're trying to do than you probably want to know. I have no heavy plans after the concert, so I'll be over where they're selling those things. Be delighted to sign anything you do buy. Gives me an excuse to say hello to everybody, kiss all the pretty women. Sorry, guys, maybe next year. And, I won't give you a long pitch. I've been trying to put my money and my life where my mouth is. And I think it's truly unconscionable that in a country that could feed everybody six times over, we have 20 million Americans hungry, half a billion people on the globe who go to bed chronically malnourished. And there's a lot of other things we've got to be doing in this country. And I don't care whether you're Republican, Democrat, left-wing, right-wing, conservative, liberal. There's an awful lot of people who ain't pulling their share. And it's really... You can't expect rich people to do much because they always just hold on to the money. You can't expect poor people to do much because they're struggling like hell to make do. It really comes down to people like you and I. And, you know, the people who put this country together were silversmiths, lawyers, planters, merchants, printers, all kinds of ordinary people who also had a different vision of what the way they wanted this country to be. And I think whether you're a singer or a TV commentator or a housewife or a businesswoman or a teacher or a student or an accountant or whatever the hell you are, I think we got a lot of work to do, and I'm looking forward to having you guys work with me. Do you guys want to hear Yvonne sing this song? Put down that cello. Now I want you to give her a big countdown to get her excited. Are you ready out there? Here we go. Here, one, two, one.
All my life's a circle, sunrise and sundown. Moon rolls through the nighttime till the daybreak comes around. All my life's a circle, well, I can't tell you why.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Today, the Egyptian and Syrian armies launched an offensive against Israel.
Our enemies hoped to surprise the citizens of Israel on Yom Kippur.
Our troops are outnumbered 7-1.
If the Arabs reach Tel Aviv, Israel will be wiped off the map. In my day, they stood for the Prime Minister.
Secretary Kissinger is on the line.
Remember that I am first an American, second I am Secretary of State, and third, I am a Jew.
We forget that in Israel we read from right to left.
The American people will pay a high price for supporting Israel.
If we have to, we will fight alone.
Our troops on the canal, they're surrounded.
You rescue these boys.
Might lead to catastrophe.
If the Americans throw us to the dogs, I will not be taken alive.
The Egyptians have fired a cruise missile at Tel Aviv.
Well, I'm not going to get under the table, but don't let me stop you.
If the Egyptians defeat us with Soviet weapons, what message does that send to the free world?
The Russians are preparing 11 airborne divisions.
When I was a child in Ukraine, they would beat Jews to death in the street for fun. I am not that little girl hiding in the cellar.
Hold by brave ascent, hold by accident.
Do you know how many people died?
All those boys. I will carry that pain to my grave.
Hold by his lady's command. Hold by
his... We will keep fighting for a guarantee of life and peace.
How shall I say is calling?
Well, we do know that October is very special because, of course, it's the month that October Girl Remastered gets another airing, or gets an airing in all sorts of ways. So welcome, Victoria Simmons. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
Excellent. And as we wait for Richard Fitzwilliams and the team, who are probably still in tears after seeing The Great Escaper, coming on board to the whole thing, we've got Fia van den Bogert. Fia, welcome. How did the, was it a 4, was it a 5, was it a 10-kilometer run? What were you doing in previous weeks?
Yeah, it was a 4-mile run, so 6 kilometers. So without any training, I went and I did it in 37 minutes. So I'm proud of myself. Yeah.
Well, so you should be. Congratulations on that.
Thank you.
But the big question is a bit like Samuel Johnson once asked about a dog on its hind legs. Why? Why did you do that? Why did you decide to actually run across the whole base?
Yeah, that's exactly have the answer to it, but my colleagues convinced me. So I think that's mostly the reason why I ran, and also because afterwards it was fun. When I was almost at the finish, I was always like, I'm never going to do this again, but I'm very glad that I did it. So now I get to say I ran a 4-mile run.
Yeah, well, this is as opposed to a 4-minute mile, which is more impressive.
Yeah, well, so I'll have to practice and then I'll
clearly, I mean, this could be the start of a whole range of Fia van den Bogert runner extraordinaire, which is all good. Well, speaking of running, as we say, or escaping, let's hold that, because as we know, Sarah Huntley has already been moved beyond words by, of course, Sir Michael Caine's last ever movie, because they are apparently writing parts for 90-year-old folk these days. Thankfully, Richard Fitzwilliams, being 108, doesn't have such difficulties from that point of view. So, Richard, we'll talk about that later. But first of all, isn't it a bit excessive for Helen Mirren's latest role to actually enhance the actual role of Golda by simply actually having a war in the Middle East come out just to actually start promoting the movie? I mean, surely that's just taking promotion a little bit too far.
I have to say that coming out of this movie and then sitting on the news was an extraordinary experience. I mean, it really was. Will it enhance its box office prospects? I imagine that some people will certainly be interested in it for obvious reasons, because the parallels, and this it basically is a reenaction of what happened in 1973 when the Israelis were caught napping by an Egyptian-Syrian attack of which they have been warned, and we have Helen Mirren as giving a remarkable performance, I have to say, under a huge amount of makeup, which is convincing, as Golda Meir, the redoubtable Prime Minister, who undoubtedly failed to read the... They had early intelligence, and there's no doubt whatever that Golda Meir's reputation has subsequently been tainted by the fact that they didn't act on it. The reason partly was that Moshe Dayan, who was such a pivotal figure in Israeli politics and the colourful hero of the 1967 war, was against full mobilisation or the preemptive strike. And what happened was that Syria, Portland, got through the Golan Heights, and most particularly the Egyptian attack made enormous headway. And at one point, I mean, they did wonder whether the Arabs might actually score a victory. The Egyptians had a tactical mistake, and the Israelis managed to surround by their third army, and they left Cairo at the mercy of the Israelis. But all of this, of course, with Russia, very big global political possible clashes here between Russia, who was backing Egypt, and Syria, and the United States, who was backing Israel. As a film, I mean, it's quite interesting. It depends on the sort of movie that you enjoy. I do, I have to say, personally, rather like these reconstructions where you have characters who looked the original, or more or less as the originals did, and there's a lot of poring over maps and getting in the room where, you know, the operations room, a lot filmed there. Some very strange parts in the film, though. Some don't work. The dream sequences where he runs into morgues found, which is decidedly erratic. And I did have to wonder, I mean, I have to be honest, I realized that this movie was deliberately showing her to be, so to speak, a woman of the people, someone who only had one assistant and lived alone. But her health was so bad in the early part of the first year we see her in hospital. And she smoked 100 a day and survived on black coffee, fair enough. What I couldn't understand was why someone who is, you know, so important, Churchill had a bunk bed beside some of the operations. He had to go up a very, very large number of stairs. It was just like we kept seeing him climbing these stairs. And, you know, health-wise, she collapses once pretty well. It's a very, very tough time. If the movies were seen,
Richard, I'm not actually interrupting you here, but literally you're becoming almost inaudible. And I'm not sure, you need to get a bit close to the microphone or else remove the sock from which you're actually communicating with us. Because otherwise,
can you hear me now?
That's much better. That is much better. That's. I mean, suddenly we can actually have thumbs up from Holland, thumbs up from Australia, thumbs up from Romsey, maybe even thumbs up from Wimbledon. So great stuff.
Just to summarize it, I mean, as a docudrama, it's rather good in the sense that obviously, there's very special relevance now, but Helen Mirren is a very, very good performance as Golda Meir. There's no doubt. There were a couple of moments that I thought the makeup showed through, but that's not much in a couple of hour movie. But there's no doubt of the relevance of this film now, because if you want to see what happened then, and you want to see what happened then when the actual intelligence, the Israelis had a very well-placed spy, was ignored. And in this case, well, the tragedy that's occurred with the Hamas attack, it is still unclear as to precisely what intelligence they had beforehand. But there's no doubt that it's 50 years. It was the film, as Alex correctly points out, it's 50 years to the day it was, the Yom Kippur War, that it was released, whereas we now see that there is very, very special relevance. Quite a good performance by Rami Hoiberger as Moshe Dayan. In fact, generally, the rest of the Camille Cotta is the private secretary to Golda Meir. She's fine. It's not, as I say, an especially good film, but it has undoubted relevance, and the performance, the Helen Mirren performance, is excellent.
Of course, on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition today, three of us were actually on the planet and alive in our current incarnations for the 1973 Yom Kippur War. Three of us weren't. Who knows? Was there one of those three of the people who were here, Victoria Simmons? Possibly not. Maybe Peppa Pig wasn't even there either. Enough of such mentions. Victoria, Golda, is this one for yourself?
I think I would like to see it, but I'm not sure I'd like to see it now, because it might be too much. But you never know. It looks as though it's really interesting.
Mm. Yes, I think I'm reminded of a sequence from Shirley Valentine, the play, where the notion of actually trying to solve the problems of the Middle East was regarded as completely unworkable back then and still unworkable even now. Fia van den Bogert, thankfully, we haven't actually seen any likelihood of Lebanon and Hezbollah coming into the conflict. And let's hope forgiveness will actually work its way through this. But from the sensible land of Holland, even though one might say, is it sensible to just run 4 miles just at a whim? What are your thoughts on Golda? Is this one for you?
I think I would actually like to watch it, and actually also now, I think now that such the conflict is so big right now, and also it's also very interesting to learn more. And yeah, I think I would watch it now. Yeah.
And Natasha Wanton in Australia, clearly delighting in the fact that Ireland and Wales have now actually joined fellow Northern Hemisphere countries at being booted out of the Rugby World Cup. Any thoughts of yourself?
I definitely think this is a movie I'd want to see, but I would be very interested to know, and I suppose with these movies, the thing is you never quite can tell how much of it is accurate and how much has been dramatized for the sake of movie making, and also the sort of the biases that you can and can't see taking place within the film. It would be very interesting to sort of compare that to real life events and sort of see a bit of a cross-examination.
Yes, they, I mean, they've had, it's an interesting point, Natasha, no, absolutely. I just must mention that I happened to be listening to Radio 4 yesterday, and at 99, Henry Kissinger, the former American Secretary of State, who's still whining and dining diplomats, it's quite amazing, gave an interview for what was around about an hour, and he is played by Liev Schreiber in this film and represents the Americans, of course, as they more or less force the Israelis to have a ceasefire with the Russians breathing down their throats or necks.
Well, throats next, as far as Henry Kissinger is concerned. I can't even get my voice down to that level, so I'm not even going to try. But I will actually turn to the fact that had Helen Mirren not been available, I'm sure an ideal person to portray with a set of amount of makeup, Golda, my ear, would have been Sarah Huntley. Sarah, did you not go up for this role, or was it just a case of, once again, your agent just let you down?
My agent just let me down, Alex. Yeah. Yeah, I think I'd go and see this film because the dilemma that I think with all that's going on at the moment is what you're told you should do and what you think you should do are two different things. And so therefore, I'd be very interested. I agree with what Natasha's saying. I think with all of these films, obviously to make it into a film, it has to have a certain extent of poetic license. But I think it's very good it's come out now, because maybe it might just help a little bit in personalising the situation that the Palestinians and the Israelis find themselves in. And maybe it might speak through that no one wants a war. I don't know. But the trouble is people are so, and you can't blame either side, so impassioned. So I would be very interested to go. I mean, I was alive when, obviously, this...
You've
this,
revealed this, the secret, Sarah. I thought... I feel most people would have said, well, it obviously has to be Natasha Wanton. She's ancient, no. Really. She had to be
well,
there.
I'm still recovering from when we get on to the next film. I cried so much. I was embarrassing. I had to go to the loo at one point to come back in. It was the audience I was with at the Curzon last night as well that was getting me. So, yes, I would... And I would really say, really, really say, I think everybody should go and see it, because I think it could possibly help a little with how we come out of this terrible situation.
Well, that obviously
it does show the complexities. Yes, the complexities of the area, and also what can happen. Directed by Guy Natif.
And your score for this movie, Richard, is?
A 7. That's a good film.
Only a 7. Interesting. I thought you might have actually gone for an 8 or a 9.
No, I did point out there were certain scenes that jarred, especially when they try in the dream sequences where she has these nightmares. They don't work at all.
And not to be confused, of course. Not to be confused, as I mentioned, with Gilda, which, of course, was the movie, I think you and Mr. Vowell with respect to that. Gilda, of course, featuring Rita Hayworth and Glenn Ford, and a classic from the 1940s. This is Gilda with an O as opposed to Gilda with an I. Easily mistaken, Richard. For a moment, I thought, what's she doing reviewing Rita Hayworth? It's a classic line. Still, never mind. Sarah Huntley has already admitted that when it comes to a movie that she will award 10 out of 10 for, it comes to the last ever movie for Sir Michael Caine. Yes, 90, but he's going to be a good novelist, so he's got a few novels that are coming through as well, so doubtless he'll still have that for a wee while. Sadly, one of his co-stars in this movie has already decided to check out of the planet Earth as it stands at present. But Sarah, as you said, in tears, a 10 out of 10 movie, is this a movie that, again, you would say people should see, just as you've advised for Gilda?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, Richard often says, you know, about the audiences there. So the audience at the Wimbledon Curzon last night were an interesting array of people, and definitely people of that age group that had got themselves the cinema quite
often. Dodgers?
Yes, as they say, and as he says in the line. And okay. Yes, the story has been dramatized in a romantic way, so that's why it appeals to people like me. But for me, it just hit it on every level. I thought that the staff in the care home, that acting was brilliant because it was real. I thought that the casting of the younger couple was brilliant because actually, I could see that they could have looked like them. I thought they had the same eyes, both of them, as the younger couple, because what you do is they go back and you see. I thought the bit that got me was getting up at 4:15 in the morning to see the sunrise, which is, when you see the film, that's very poignant. And I think the thing that really got me was two things, actually, bearing in mind with the situation the world's in at the moment. Is that when, sorry, it's getting me tearful just talking about it. And I know this was sensationalized in the film and it probably didn't happen like this, but the kindness of normal human beings to other human beings. So when he gets to, sorry, I can't think of the character's name now, I'm so emotional. What's the name of the chap?
The character is Bernard Jordan, played by Michael Caine, and his wife is Renee, played by Glenda Jackson.
So when Bernard gets to France, which you're worried about him, like, oh gosh, is he going to run out of money? How's he going to get there? He's befriended by this lovely man who turns out to be an alcoholic. And you find out the backstory to both of them of why they want to go. And that's not revealed until they actually get there. But there's this wonderful scene where there's some German soldiers visiting the beach, which Bernard particularly wants to go back to. And he has memories and recapturing and going back to a place to pay your respects, but also to pay respect, to remind yourself of that point of your life. And I don't want to spoil it because I don't want to be a spoiler, but there's a wonderful bit why Bernard goes back, and by him going back, he also takes this other chap that befriends him back, and they meet some Germans and they buy them a drink. And the German soldier can't speak English and neither can Bernard. And the acting there is incredible because it brings to the point, I can't put this into words, none of those Germans wanted to go and be at war, and Bernard didn't want to go at war. And the guilt that he has with him of the people that he's lost and the life that he led And then it's got amazingly comic bits in it when Glenda Jackson's role doesn't tell them, as in the story, she doesn't tell them that the whole of the old people's home is mortified that he's gone and died somewhere along the seafront. And that she goes, oh, no, he's gone off. And they share this secret. And what I really liked about it was that it doesn't matter what age you are, you can still live your life and you can still do it. And I just can't put into words. And then the final scene where they both get up at 4:15 and go and see the sunset at 90. And then when I have to just tell you this, that the thing that really got me was that at the end, when the credits come, I was intrigued to see there's a brilliant cast. I thought it was brilliantly acted, all the parts. I was watching that. And then it just said at the end that 6 months after Bernard returns, and it's his wife that's a bit more poorly than him, actually, he dies, and 7 days later, she dies. Well,
so allowing for that emotional whack, allowing for the fact that it sounds to me almost as though you could have actually experienced the joys of being an advisor for Peppa Pig, basically. Let's turn to Victoria. Different point there, but there is a relevance, which clearly we could reveal when Victoria writes our memoirs. Is The Great Escaper still one for you, Victoria?
Oh, yeah. They were talking about it when I was driving home from work. Oink. the way they were talking about it was very much like Sarah's been describing it. And it does seem like something that you just have to go and watch.
Is this what you're going to go for, Richard, or is it a case of this is where I'll actually wear my curmudgeonly hat and say, no, I'll give it 1 out of 10?
No. Well, I don't think anyone will do that. It's directed by Oliver Parker, who's made quite a few good films. Yes, as you've heard, the story basically of 89-year-old Bernard Jordan living in a nursing home with his wife, Renee, applying too late to go on the organised trip to commemorate 75 years since the D-Day landings where he was on Sword Beach, and deciding then to go on his own. And it is indeed an emotional film. And his teaming up with Arthur, played by John Standing, a very good performance there. It's fascinating. It's a love story, as Sarah said, and the relations between Glenda Jackson's last performance as Renee are absolutely remarkable. And telling a lot of the story in flashback and the way they do it, I thought worked extremely well. I also thought Michael Caine, incidentally, Alex, apparently there may be one last film left in Michael Caine.
The BBC.
Things
are, he lied to the BBC?
According to reports. So we might see this remarkable actor again, but certainly he scores very well, I thought, as Bernard. And I mean, the character has such tremendous spirit. It's a movie for those particularly who like movies that are constructed in a sentimental way. I do have to say that the one thing I would point out in it is that it is the way it's structured. You do very often feel it's a bit contrived. I mean, there's a soldier with PTSD, there's the Germans that they run across, and so forth. I mean, it is indeed moving, and certainly the scenes in the care home are very realistic. I enjoyed it very much. I think it has several messages, including, as we don't want spoilers, but Arthur, John Standing's character, has the secret, the reason he's an alcoholic, the reason he really can't face the journey back. And it does show that in reference is made to the Allied bombing of Caen after the D-Day landings and what happened. And that was what Arthur's brother died in. And Arthur was a bomber pilot, and you can see the connection and how he faces up to that, or should I say how helped by Bernard he faces up to that. It's very moving. It's a very fine performance by Standing, and Glenda Jackson, certainly someone we all miss, and I think she was indefatigable. And again, her carer becomes a very good performance, becomes a confidant. There are aspects of life, there's so many aspects of life that are explored here, especially going back what haunts Arthur, there's always been something in the marriage between him and Renee that he doesn't want to talk about, and she doesn't particularly want to push him. And we discover what it is as the film unfolds. I would fault it for occasional lapses into sentimentality, but on given the subject matter, a very good film, and certainly 8 out of 10.
Yes, I didn't feel you'd give it for a 10. Fia van den Burgert, is this one for yourself, given that, in essence, once again, Holland show the way for civilization to actually operate in these kind of things? And let's face it, A Bridge Too Far is, for my mind, probably one of the best war movies ever made.
Well, I mean, the way Sarah spoke about the movie, it almost made me emotional. No, I mean, I remember watching the trailer. I haven't been able to see the movie, so I'm definitely going to see it, by the way. But it just, everyone has learned about the Second World War at school, but learning those stories of the actual people that fought there is so interesting. And so, and the way this movie is, it just makes me emotional now. No, but I'm definitely going to see it. And I also love that Renee says to him, well, he's been to France before. So it's just perfectly.
Just as you were in tears, it was making you laugh at the same time.
Yes.
It's perfect. Let's get on with life. What have we got left? Let's just use it. That's what I love, the message from Glenda Jackson's character.
Yeah. And also that it's called the Great Escape. I mean, it's perfect. Yeah.
Except, of course, there's another theme that there's no escape from. But that's old age, alas.
Oh, Richard, come on. We've all lived and died many times, and we'll probably do it all over again, basically. It's just a case of getting a focus on life. Of course, Sarah is a big fan of the original movie, The Great Escape, as opposed to The Great Escaper. I know this because she once sent me a DVD for Christmas all about The Great Escape. So all the stuff. I still cherish that, Sarah. So just pleased to know. Always good.
I mean, I go so far. I know I can't go further. We haven't heard what Natasha's going to say. I know Natasha will probably back me up here. But it's one for your mum, Natasha. Natasha takes tissues. But I want to buy it. I want to make sure I have a hard copy of it. And today, actually, I'm not sad. It marked 6 years to the day that my father died. The film had such a big effect on me. When you see it, when he goes back with this, don't want to give anything away. I am going to go at 6 o'clock to Nightingale House to give them a bottle of whiskey to drink to remember my dad at the care home. And next to the care home, a little bit further down, is the Nightingale Pub. And I'm taking myself there with my husband for a roast dinner. And in fact, as it is, it's a Jewish nursing home, as you know, Nightingale House. So I want to give them a bottle of whiskey because I think they need whiskey at the moment. But it's made me feel positive. I want to go to a place where I can remember my dad sitting there happy. And that's what the film did for me. But Natasha, you've got to tell us whether you're going to go or not.
Oh, Sarah, I love you. You are just the most wonderful human being. Yes, definitely I'm going to go. Definitely I'm going to go see this. I feel like it maybe it risks the other viewers. As we all know, I am a very sentimental person and I am a very big ugly crier. I feel like it maybe risks to those around me in the cinema if I have an audience to go watch it with.
So just tell them to go wearing raincoats and Macintoshes. They'll be fine.
They probably will need to. So it might be one that I might have to watch in the privacy of my own home, just for the audience's sake and for my own personal sort of self-preservation of my pride. So I can appreciate it fully through the ugly sobbing into a tissue. But yes, I do definitely want to see this. And I feel like this would be a big hit with my family across the generations. I feel like it's something that would probably make all of them cry.
Although
I think it's right because the other thing is that we've got such wonderful actors and the poignancy that Glenda Jackson has popped up to the stars now. And all of that mixed in. Perhaps I'm just a bit silly because I was born on the 6th of June. I don't know, but I'm always very proud I was born on D-Day. But, you know, I shouldn't say that. That's being, I don't know, too proud of D-Day.
Just in case people are wondering, that doesn't mean Sarah was actually born in 1945. It was, of course, a lot earlier than that.
Fascinating, by the way. Just to mention, I happened to see recently the film that documented from all perspectives including the German and the French. D-Day, The Longest Day, which I remember when it originally came out. And,
so you should, Richard, as we said, 118 still going. Of course, the one message
that we got... How right you are, Alex. Still going. That's the thing.
Yeah, well, the one message is Glenda Jackson, sadly, although she was an MP, never actually got to portray anything in the world of Peppa Pig. Never mind. It's just a big gulf in her acting career. And neither did she actually release any singles. Speaking of which, Victoria, your latest remastered version of October is out in a matter of days. So shameless plug, please.
Oh, yes. Well, it's definitely a song about choices. So maybe that's a choice that Michael Caine made of staying or going in his acting career.
And an ideal Bond movie. It has to be said. It's the ideal Bond Definitely. Theme. I see what you mean about the spy aspect. It would suit the broccoli scenario very, very much, actually, over that. We might indeed have a short clip now to take us out to the news. But for the moment, to Victoria Simmons, don't worry, Peppa Pig won't be a permanent stain in your career. I'm sure that she'll still be sort of around in all sorts of ways. Keep smiling, that's the important thing. And remember, that costume shouldn't get too hot. To Fia van den Bogert, to Sarah Huntley, to Natasha Wanton, and of course to Richard Fitzwilliams. Don't know where Richard is these days. Probably he might be in some hotel room somewhere. Certainly doesn't seem to be.
I am in a
place.
Hotel room. A friend has been celebrating her 50th birthday with a Dracula theme. Yes. And may we also, by the way, pay a sincere tribute to someone considered a poet of the cinema, Terence Davies. who died aged 77 this week. His autobiographical film, Distant Voices, Still Lives, is considered one of the most remarkable in British cinema, and it had a performance by Pete Postlethwaite as his alcoholic, abusive father, which I can still vividly remember. And he made films from the deep blue sea with Rachel Weisz, which I particularly liked, to The House of Mirth, Gillian Anderson, which I wasn't too keen on, but ending up with Benediction with a very distinguished cast, but someone who always a loner in life, apparently, but someone again who made a definite mark on cinema with a very distinctive style from Liverpool.
And to Richard Fitzwilliams, keep on, keep on, keep on, keep on watching the movies.
Beggar and thief. America.